Man, you know, sometimes child custody disputes across state lines. It's like they're playing 4D chess or something. Like, whoa. Especially for, you know, law students who are trying to wrap their heads around this stuff, or for military families constantly on the move. It's a lot. But today, we're going to try to make it a little easier, maybe a little less intimidating. We're going to unpack a super important case in remarriage of Brandt v. Brandt.
Ah, yes. The Brandt case, a landmark decision from the Colorado Supreme Court. It really helps us understand how courts figure out which state gets to call the shots in these tricky child custody situations when families are, spread out across the country. It's like a roadmap for navigating the UCCJEA, the Uniform Child Custody Jurisdiction and Enforcement Act, which, let's be honest, can sometimes feel like a bit of a legal maze.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what we're focusing on today, right? This whole idea of presently reside versus simply being physically present. It's a distinction the Brandt case really highlights, and it's super important for figuring out how courts decide which state has the power to make decisions about a child's well-being when parents live in different states.
Right on. And, it's not just about legal technicalities. It's about preventing parents from trying to game the system, going forum shopping, as it's called, to find a court that might be more sympathetic to their side. That kind of maneuvering is rarely in the best interest of the child. It's about creating stability, not chaos.
For sure. And in today's world, where people are more mobile than ever, understanding how these jurisdictional lines get drawn is, well, it's kind of essential. So by the end of this deep dive, you know, our listeners should have a much better grasp on how these things work and why it all matters so much. Sound good?
Sounds great.
Let's do
it.
All right. So to understand the Brandt case, we got to understand the Brandts, right? Back in 2006, George and Christine Brandt got divorced in Maryland. Their custody agreement gave them joint custody of their child, we'll call him CB, with Christine being the primary physical custodian. Pretty standard stuff so far, right?
Yeah, pretty typical arrangement, but then things get a little more, well, a little more complex. In 2008, George, who was in the army, got orders sending him to Colorado, and then Christine joins the army too in 2009, and she gets stationed in Texas. So we're starting to see that interstate element coming into play.
Okay, so we've got mom in Texas, dad in Colorado, and then in 2010, things get even more complicated. Christine gets deployed to Iraq. During her deployment, CB goes to live with George in Colorado, which both parents agreed to. When Christine comes back from Iraq in October 2010, she's reassigned to Texas. And they decide, hey, let's let CB finish the school year in Colorado with George to keep things stable for him.
Yeah, trying to make the best of a difficult situation. But of course, the situation shifts again in April 2011. Christine gets orders to go back to Maryland by August 1st of that year, and CB moves to Texas to be with her in May 2011. And this is where the legal battle lines really get drawn.
Okay, so why is May 2011 so pivotal?
Because, well, on May 6th, just as CB moves to Texas, George files a petition in Colorado. He wants to register the original custody order from Maryland, the one from the divorce, and then modify it in Colorado.
Ah, I see where this is going.
Right. And his argument is basically this: Christine and CB are in Texas, I'm in Colorado, so nobody currently resides in Maryland anymore. And the Colorado court, they buy this argument, they register the Maryland order, and then crucially, they say, okay, Colorado, you have the jurisdiction to change this custody order. This all goes down on May 25, 2011. And this is where the whole conflict between the Maryland and Colorado courts really kicks off. This decision by the Colorado court is what sends this case all the way up to the Colorado Supreme Court.
Got it. So boiling it all down, the big question the Colorado Supreme Court had to wrestle with was this: was the Colorado court right to step in and take over the Maryland custody order? Did they get the whole UCCJEA thing right?
You got it. And specifically, did they correctly interpret the whole presently reside thing when they decided Maryland was out of the picture, jurisdictionally speaking?
Okay, so let's zoom in a bit and talk about the UCCJEA for a second. What's the main principle that determines which state gets to handle these interstate custody cases in the first place?
The UCCJEA is all about making sure one state, the home state, gets to keep control. So the state that issues the initial custody order in this case, that's Maryland back in 2006, they usually get what's called exclusive continuing jurisdiction. It's like they have the primary ongoing authority over the custody case. This whole idea is designed to stop parents from, constantly moving around, trying to find a court that'll give them what they want. It's all about protecting the child from that kind of instability and uncertainty.
Makes sense. So under what circumstances could a state like Maryland lose that exclusive jurisdiction?
Well, there are a few scenarios, but the one that matters most in the Brandt case is this. when neither parent nor the child presently resides in the original state anymore. If that happens, then the original state's exclusive jurisdiction ends. And this is where the Brandt case really digs into the weeds. The Colorado District Court, they basically said, Christine and CB are in Texas, George is in Colorado, so no one's currently residing in Maryland.
Simple as that, right?
Well, not so fast. The Colorado Supreme Court came back and said, hold on, not so simple. They said, focusing on just currently resided, like where everyone's physically located at that moment, that's not the whole story. It's not how the UCCJEA defines presently reside.
Okay, so they're saying presently reside is something more than just where you happen to be on a given day.
Exactly. They said it's more about this legal idea of domicile, you know, your real home, the place you plan to return to stay. The court called it a totality test, meaning court's got to look at a bunch of different things to figure out where someone presently resides and not just a snapshot in time.
So walk us through why the lower court's focus on currently reside was off base. What's the difference the Supreme Court was trying to highlight here?
Well, it all boils down to domicile. It's more than just an address. It's about your permanent home base, the place you really intend to settle in. The Supreme Court pointed out that while, yes, Christine and CB were in Texas when George filed in Colorado, Christine was only there because of her military orders, you know, temporary assignments. She still had strong ties to Maryland, her driver's license, for example, and probably paying taxes there too, things that showed she planned to go back to Maryland when she could. The lower court didn't really consider these ongoing ties to Maryland.
So what are these factors courts should be looking at when they're trying to figure out where someone presently resides? You mentioned this totality test. What does that entail?
The Supreme Court laid out some pretty clear factors that courts have to consider under this totality test. First, they got to look at how long someone's been away from the original state and why. A temporary absence, like a military deployment, is totally different from someone moving away permanently and never coming back. Then there's the person's intention to return to the original state. This is super important for establishing domiciles. Do they really see themselves going back to that state? And the court also has to look at their legal and practical connections to that state, things like owning property there, driver's license, voter registration, where they pay taxes, all that stuff. And then for military folks, they got to take into account how those assignments affect residency, because moving around is just part of the job, right? And lastly, the court can also consider what the original state says about residency. You know, does that state still consider that person a resident?
So it's really not as easy as just saying, well, you're standing in this state right now, so this is where you reside.
Right. It's more about where you consider home, where you really intend to go back to. And the Supreme Court made it super clear that the burden of proof is on the person who's claiming the original state has lost jurisdiction. That was George in this case. He couldn't just point to Christine and CB being physically in Texas. He had to prove that they didn't presently reside in Maryland anymore, taking all these other factors into account.
So why does all this matter? Why is this distinction between presently reside and just physically being somewhere so important, especially in child custody cases?
It matters a lot for a few big reasons. Number one, it helps stop parents from trying to manipulate the system, from going forum shopping, as we talked about. You know, they can't just move to another state temporarily and then try to get a custody case started there, especially if their ties to the original state are still strong. And this is especially important for military families who move all the time for their service. Imagine a parent's deployed overseas. If we just looked at where they are physically, they could lose their home state residency, which would be a mess, right? It wouldn't be fair.
That's a really good point. It brings a level of stability and fairness to the whole process.
Exactly. The whole point of these jurisdictional rules is to create stability for the child. Their lives shouldn't be disrupted just because a parent is temporarily living somewhere else. The UCCJEA is trying to keep custody cases in the state with the strongest connections to the child and the family, unless those connections are really gone. And the totality test helps do that.
So let's talk about the fallout from the Colorado Supreme Court's decision in the Brandt case. What happened next?
Well, the Colorado Supreme Court, they reversed the lower court's order and said, nope, Colorado doesn't have jurisdiction here. They sent the case back to the lower court with specific instructions. They basically said, you need to look at this again, this time using the totality test like we told you.
And were there any other instructions for the Colorado court as they revisited this case?
Oh, yeah. The Supreme Court told the Colorado court to talk to the Maryland court and figure out the facts about jurisdiction. It was basically a big emphasis on communication and cooperation between the states, which is a really important part of the UCCJEA, you know, trying to keep these jurisdictional disputes from getting dragged out unnecessarily. And they also said, let the parties present new evidence about this whole totality test thing. So, you know, they could bring in evidence about whether Christine really planned to go back to Maryland, how strong her ties to that state were, and the specifics of why she was in Texas and for how long.
So based on everything the Colorado Supreme Court laid out, what do you think will happen as this case moves forward?
Well, I think it's pretty likely that Maryland will end up keeping jurisdiction over this case. The Supreme Court really emphasized that the lower court messed up by using the wrong standard. So unless George can bring in some really convincing new evidence that Christine and CB don't presently reside in Maryland anymore, you know, considering the totality test, then it seems pretty clear that any more legal battles about custody are going to have to happen in Maryland.
This Brandt case has been super illuminating, especially for our law student listeners. Let's recap some of those key takeaways one more time.
For sure. In Remarriage of Brandt v. Brandt offers some really valuable insights for anyone studying family law or civil procedure. First, it shows that presently reside under the UCCJEA isn't just about where you are physically. It's much more nuanced than that. It's about your intent, your connections, your domicile, and courts have to consider all those things.
And this has some real implications for folks who might work with military families, right?
Well, absolutely. That's the second big takeaway. Serving in the military and moving around because of it doesn't automatically mean you've given up residency in your home state. The courts have to consider the unique circumstances of military families.
And what about the burden of proof? Who has to prove what in these jurisdictional disputes?
Right, the third key point. In the Brandt case, it was George who argued that the original state Maryland didn't have jurisdiction anymore. And because he was making that claim, the burden of proof was on him. He had to prove that Christine and CB didn't presently reside in Maryland. And just pointing to a temporary change in location, well, that wasn't enough.
This deep dive into the Brandt case has been really eye-opening. It definitely clarifies a really fundamental part of how the UCCJEA works. So for our listeners, as you continue your legal journey, here's something to think about. In today's super mobile world, how do we think these interpretations of presently reside and domicile are going to evolve? How do we make sure these laws keep up with the times? And how do we balance the rights of parents while always, always putting the best interests of the child first in these interstate custody battles? It's complicated stuff, but the Brandt case gives us a good place to start.
Couldn't agree more. It's definitely a lot to think about, for sure.
Well, that's all the time we have for today's deep dive. Until next time, happy studying.
Yeah.
Take care.